Hello there.
You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Two receivers right, tight end, and another receiver left. DeLong got it in the air and intercepted. Troy Bierman is up and running. 20, 15, Bierman, 10, 5, he is. Score, touchdown, Troy Bierman.
Stephon Logan back deep, 6 yards deep, going to bring it out back to the 10, to the 15, to the 20, there he goes, 25, to the 30-yard line, still going, cut that side, at the 40, the man to beat, inside the 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Detroit Lions, Stephon Logan, 105 yards on the return.
This is Wayne Larravee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to our in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, this is a proving ground weekend in the NFC.
We've got the latest from the NFL owners meeting and what's new on collective bargaining, the Cleveland Browns quarterback situation, and could the old Ocho Cinco be coming back?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larravee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. And Hub, this was a big week in the NFL, and it was the owners' annual fall meeting. It took place in Chicago, where people can get in and out from all parts of the country pretty easily. And senior editor Eric Edholm got into those meetings. And Eric, we heard some rumblings about the CBA, and some of it sounded positive. What did you hear?
Imagine that. Most of the owners scurried by us as we attempted to get their take on what happened in the meetings. Obviously, we're not privy to all the inside information, but one who stuck around for a moment was Patriots owner Robert Kraft. He's obviously emerged as one of the key figures, I think, in the negotiations between the owners and the players. And his little bit of optimism, saying that he thought a new deal, a new collective bargaining agreement could get done by the end of the year. You know, that was kind of the first time we'd heard a timetable, a positive feeling from the owners. And it was something we asked Commissioner Roger Goodell about. You know, he agreed it is possible. And yet there, you know, he seemed to say that there was still a lot of work to get done.
You know, Eric, I could be the next man to walk on the moon, too, but that's not going to happen either. I think the problem that we have here is that there is no common ground, as near as we can tell, unless you heard something different from these meetings, on any of the key issues. And specifically, it is about the share of revenue that the owners and the players are going to get. It's about doing something for both the pre-59ers and then the retired players between 59 and 93. And it's about the 18-game schedule. And it's fine to say, yeah, we can get it done in the next couple months, but was there any inkling that there's been any movement from either side on any of these issues?
The good news, Hub, is that the stuff that you were talking about, the retired player benefits, you know, Mike Dicka came in, they've got other, George Martin and Gay Culverhouse and some other people came in to speak to the group, and there seemed to be more of a connection on that issue. You know, the NFL put them out front and center, let them openly, freely talk to the media. The owners seemed very receptive of what they had to say, so I think the retired player benefits might be one of those things that is one of the early bridges that could get everything on the same table. As far as the 18 games, they said that wasn't even a serious topic of discussion there at the meetings. That, you know, the other stuff probably was, but they certainly weren't talking about it to us.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how that whole thing goes down. But at any rate, another one of your teams is the Philadelphia Eagles that you've been covering, Eric. And there's, of course, question now week to week on the situation involving Michael Vick at quarterback. Do you think he'll play this week? What are you hearing?
You know, there's no question he would love to play against the Atlanta Falcons, his old team. He got some action against them last year down in Atlanta. I think, you know, now that he is the starter, you know, even when healthy, he would love to face his old club and get in there. It's a toss-up at this point. It's looking like, you know, they haven't cleared him and they haven't ruled him out. He's still sort of sitting in limbo. But my best guess is that Kevin Cobb will probably go for a second straight week.
Well, also, the Eagles made a trade this week. They admitted a mistake on Mike Bell, a free agent acquisition. They deal him to Cleveland for Jerome Harrison, while the Browns admitted a mistake on Harrison.
Yeah.
Although maybe they're both a better fit in their new staffs. But I want to come back to Vic for a second, Eric, because there's a disconnect here for me. Kevin Cobb was the starter. He was the franchise. They traded Donovan McNabb. He got hurt. Mike Vick came in, played well, got the job. Mike Vick got hurt. Kevin Cobb came in, played pretty well last Sunday night. Mike Vick is the starter. Andy Reid isn't waffling off that. If and when Vick is healthy, he's going to get his job back, even though Cobb didn't.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, I mean, Cobb played well. I mean, he didn't do well in relief of Vick in that Redskins game, of course. But, you know, he could have done better. A lot of missed passes, that sort of thing. But the thinking now is we're throwing our weight behind Vick. And if and when he's healthy, when he's ready to go, they're going to build their team this season, their hopes around him.
Boy, that's very interesting. Yeah. An about face from what we heard at the start of the season. Thank you very much, Eric. Appreciate it. Executive editor Dan Arkish is with us. Dan, in San Francisco, the Niners are 0-5. How can it get much worse?
Well, now the owner, Jed York, is kind of adding to what's becoming a laughingstock when he predicted to ESPN early in the week before leaving for the owners' meetings that he thought the Niners still were going to win the NFC West. He just made a very brash prediction, and Niners Nation didn't take too well to it, guys. I mean, the perception of the young owner is becoming increasingly negative.
Dan, I don't want to put you on the spot here because I'm not sure how much you've studied this, but if you have any answers for me at all, I believe Mark Zuckerberg's in his mid to late 20s, too. He's a brilliant businessman. He's made billions of dollars. The fact that York is 29 is not a disqualifier, but what are his credentials to be the youngest, you know, president of an NFL team outside of the fact that mom and dad own the ball club?
No, I think after all is said and done, Hub, it's the fact that, you know, he is the son of John York, who
screwed things up royally, by the way.
Well, that's the thing now. You know, under Jed, I mean, with the way things went last year and they, you know, got better and it looked like they were really going to be the strongest team in the NFC West, there was some hope out there. And so people were withholding judgment on Jed. But now with everything that's gone down, it's like everybody is saying like father, like son.
Interesting. All right, Dan, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next week. Stay tuned. We've got more news and notes from around the NFL on the way we hear it when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. And we welcome in senior editor Mike Wilkening. Mike, let's start with that Cleveland Browns-Pittsburgh Steelers game coming up at Pittsburgh this weekend. The Browns have quarterback injuries. Colt McCoy, the rookie, may get his first start. Is that still holding up here as we tape this late in the week?
Right. As we tape late in the week, it looks like that's going to be the case with Eric Mangini kind of saying that his lean towards starting McCoy was, quote, pronounced, unquote, a little bit more than it was earlier in the week. And that certainly would seem to be the case with Seneca Wallace and Jake DeLhomme battling ankle injuries. This would be the most likely outcome Sunday. But a tall order for McCoy, tall order for this Browns offense to get much going. Pittsburgh getting Ben Roethlisberger back, having a very tough run defense when the Browns have really been best when they can kind of lean on a physical ground game. Challenges ahead, you'd have to say, for Cleveland.
Well, Wilkie, the big question is, my sense is this is Mike Holmgren / Eric Mangini's worst nightmare. They may or may not believe that McCoy has a chance to be the guy of the future, but they did not want him on the field this year, especially not this early this year, especially not debuting against the Steelers. So the relevant question is, had they seen enough to have hopes and be confident that McCoy was slowly beginning to look like he could be the guy of the future, if not today?
Well, one of the positives, if you're looking at Colt McCoy at this point, guys, is that he finished the preseason very well. He struggled the first two games, and I think there were questions about would he make it and, you know, how is he going to fit on this team and things like that. Well, he rebounded really nicely and made the team ahead of Brett Ratliff, who the Browns have re-signed this week to be a backup here for a few weeks at the very least. So I would say that when it comes down to it, McCoy has shown some flashes of the ability that I think made him a star at Texas, at least in preseason action. Certainly that is not Pittsburgh in week six against that tough defense in a regular season game. Nonetheless, he showed enough to make the team. They get a chance to see what he can do. And we know that, you know, going back to college, accurate passer, won some games. So there's a little bit of a resume to go off of. And as I mentioned, guys, this is a run first offense. Peyton Hillis is going to be the focal point of what they're doing. They really have been able to assert their will in the ground game at certain points, most memorably that Baltimore game. That's going to be, I think, their operating mode here going forward.
Yeah, but they're in it against the Steelers, who get their quarterback back this week, right?
They do. And you know, look, that opens up a whole world of possibilities for that offense, too, for obvious reasons, guys. I mean, this is a team that really, from a passing standpoint, when Ben Roethlisberger returns, everything opens up because Roethlisberger is obviously a guy, the play breaks down. He creates, you know, he's maybe the best in the league at that. And for a receiving core with Mike Wallace, who can get deep, Hines Ward, obviously a crafty guy that still knows how to get open, Heath Miller maybe becomes a bigger part of what they're doing going forward. All of a sudden, you've got a passing game that certainly is enhanced, and you have a running game with Rashard Mendenhall that really held its own with Roethlisberger out. So a lot of positive feelings about the offense right here coming out of the bye.
But here's the big question for the Steelers, Mike. There was a lot of veterans in that locker room who were not happy with Ben Roethlisberger through training camp from the time that all the summer trouble started. They felt that he had let the team down. It's been quiet now. He hasn't been around the team until about 10, 12 days ago. Is all forgiven? Is all ready to go back to where they were? Or does Roethlisberger have things to prove to those veteran leaders on the team?
Well, I would say that when it comes down to it, Hub, I think that if the Steelers win, if Roethlisberger plays well, if this team picks up where it left off after four games, I would tend to think that those storylines and things like that would sort of be passed up and the focus would be on what they were doing at that point. I tend to think that when it comes down to it, Roethlisberger's clearly the starter here. There was never a quarterback controversy. There's never been any doubt he's their best quarterback. He's a guy that's led the core of that team to two Super Bowl titles. I still think, you know, when it comes down to it, how he plays and how he performs will tell the tale in terms of how he's judged the season overall.
Mike, another one of your teams, the Cincinnati Bengals, off to a somewhat disappointing start, especially offensively. They're 2-3 in the standings. Chad Ochocinco spoke out this week. What's taken him so long? But he said, hey, listen, he hasn't been the Chad Ochocinco that he needs to be. And after the bye week, he's going back to the same old Chad, and he's expecting that to elevate the Bengals. What do you hear?
Well, I think this, you know, that's certainly interesting, guys. I think that when it comes down to it, you know, as Chad Ochocinco's opportunities in the passing game may be, you know, dwindled a little bit, three catches in these last two games before the bye, you know, Terrell Owens stepped up and played very well, and has, you know, played like a number one receiver. And Chad Ochocinco plays, can still play like that, 12 catches in the opener. You would tend to think that, all things considered, you know, there'll be plenty of opportunities for Chad. If he plays with more of a swagger going forward, if he thinks that helps him and that helps the offense, that certainly would be a nice thing. But, you know, this is an offense that's done some nice things, and they've also made some inopportune mistakes at times. And really, right now at 2-3, with a tough schedule coming up, obviously the question we have going forward is, how does this all fit together?
Well, he is the swagger in Cincinnati. There's no doubt about that. Stay tuned. We've got the games coming up next on Pro Football Week. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrivee along with Hub Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, Arizona, Cincinnati, Buffalo, and Carolina enjoy a bye week. Meanwhile, a traditional AFC North Division matchup has a little more intrigue this time as the Pittsburgh Steelers welcome back their quarterback Ben Roethlisberger off the suspension list, and they host the Cleveland Browns. Speaking of quarterbacks, Jake Delhomme, Seneca Wallace have ankle injuries, are question marks for this game. It's expected that rookie Colt McCoy could get his first start behind center for the Browns. The Steelers went 3-1 without Big Ben because their defense has returned to form this year, and their running game is generating 133.5 yards rushing per game, 4.3 yards per carry. You know, if the only difference between these two teams was at the quarterback position this weekend, it would be a huge difference. However, there's much more of a difference between these two teams beyond quarterback, and Pittsburgh should be able to roll at home over the Cleveland Browns. The San Diego Chargers are off to their usual sluggish 2-3 start, coming in off a 35-27 loss at Denver. Third road loss for the Bolts this season. This week they're in St. Louis to take on the 2-3 Rams. Rams coming in off a 44-6 loss to the Detroit Lions in Detroit. They also lost leading wide receiver Mark Clayton, who suffered a season-ending knee injury. Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers is having another all-pro season. He's thrown for multiple scores in each game, and last week he featured the deep threat talents of Malcolm Floyd, the wide receiver, hooking up eight times with Rivers for 213 yards and a touchdown in that loss at Oakland. One note on this game, Rams have not defeated an AFC team since the 2006 campaign. Huh?
Wayne, we've got the Detroit Lions going to visit the New York Giants. Giants in a game that I think might just be fascinating. Now, everybody, you know, the Detroit Lions still kind of a laughingstock at 1-4. They got off the schneid last week. But the reality is they could easily be 4-1, maybe 5-0, probably should be at least 3-2. And they had their biggest win in 15 years last week as they destroyed the St. Louis Cardinals at home. But they go to New York, where just 2 weeks ago the Giants were rumored to be imploding, looking to be one of the laughingstocks of the league. Now they may be the best team in the NFC. They destroyed the Bears at home on Sunday night and then went into Houston last week and destroyed the Texans, who some people think are the favorite in the AFC South. It is all clicking for the Giants, even their wounded warriors, Mathias Kiwanuka, back to working out now. They think they're going to get healthy. Hakeem Nicks is emerging as a star in this league. And to me, the Giants are the team to watch in the NFC, but they better not get caught napping against this Lion team that hasn't won much in the last couple of years, because they're playing much better football as they arrive at the new Meadowlands Stadium.
Well, you know, the other tenant in the Meadowlands, the New York Jets, are red hot as they travel to the Mile High City to take on Kyle Orton and the Denver Broncos. The Jets are 4-1. They've won four straight after that season-opening loss to the Ravens. Came in off a Monday night victory over the Minnesota Vikings. And the intrigue of this game, Hub, is Denver's high-producing passing game, led by Orton, who's thrown for 307 yards or more in each of the last four games against one of the top cornerback combinations in the league, Darrelle Revis and Antonio Cromartie. Denver's aerial show is no fluke. They went to 314 passing yards against the Ravens on the road last week. That's a huge number against that kind of defense. Broncos look to get running back Knowshon Moreno back into the lineup. He missed the last three games due to injuries and could provide some needed balance in their offense. Huh?
Wayne, Oakland visits San Francisco, and the Raiders are a team that nobody knows how to get their arms around. The 49ers have been well documented in this show and way we hear it in recent weeks, 0-5. Mike Singletary doesn't seem to know where to turn. Alex Smith is on the bubble at quarterback. Do they get their first win of the season? Well, when you looked at the schedule a few weeks ago, you thought the Raiders are coming in. That would be a good spot for it. But here come these Raiders at 2-3. They knocked off the Chargers last week in spite of being outgained 506 yards to just 279. Now, they've got a really hot tight end in Zach Miller, 17 catches for 184 yards and a touchdown in each of the last two games. The 184 is combined for the last two games. But here's where you get the downside. The Raiders at least 85 yards in penalties in three of their first five games, and they're giving up about $1.50 a game on the ground. That's what the 49ers are going to try and do with Frank Gore. But here come the Niners' problems. Three or more turnovers in three of their first games, including five last week. The San Francisco 49ers don't appear ready to win, even though this looks like a spot on the schedule where the Raiders could be had. And, Wayne, the Raiders are playing a little bit better football.
Yeah, you're right. On Monday night, a couple of 3-2 teams in an early season proving ground game at Jacksonville. Tennessee Titans, bit of a surprise, coming off a 34-27 victory at Dallas last week, remain on the road as they take on the Jaguars in Jacksonville. Good matchup of 2-3-2 teams. The Jags coming off back-to-back victories for the first time since last November. Titans sacked quarterback Tony Romo six times last week in Dallas, and that could be a problem for a Jacksonville offensive line that has given up nine sacks in five games and could be without starting left guard Justin Smiley, who went down with an ankle sprain. Titans have won five of the last seven games in this series. Stay tuned. We've got some big games coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish. Some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. Well, who would have thought, Hub, 6 weeks into the season, the world champion New Orleans Saints would be looking up at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the NFC South. But we should have known. I mean, usually the team that wins the South one year finishes last the next year. But the case right now is the 3-2 Saints meeting the 3-1 Buccaneers. Bucs scored 10 points, final 90 seconds last week to win at Cincinnati. Got a pick six to do it. Speaking of scoring, Saints averaged 32 points a game last year, just 19.8 points per game so far this season. But they're dealing with, like the Packers, a plethora of injuries down there in New Orleans.
Oh, they really are. And, you know, the Bucs are young. They're going to win some games they probably shouldn't, like they did in Cincinnati last week. And then they're going to get in games like this that are going to test their mettle. We shall learn more about the Bucs and their young quarterback, Josh Freeman, with the defending champs. But with the Saints, it's as much about injuries as anything else, because they were playing pretty well. They've been without both running backs at some point. Reggie Bush still gone for a couple more weeks. Pierre Thomas missed the last couple. You got Drew Brees playing with the brace on his leg on the other side of the ball. Their best cornerback, Tracy Porter, has been out. They've been banged up along both lines. The Saints will get better. I just don't know if it'll be this week in Tampa Bay.
Meanwhile, Desperation Bowl in Minneapolis this week. Couple of preseason NFC title game favorites coming in with 1-3 records as the Dallas Cowboys visit the Minnesota Vikings in a game that also rematches a divisional playoff matchup from last winter. But wow, what a difference a season makes for these two. We get the story from Russell Scott.
It's not the start that either team expected. After all, they met in a divisional playoff game last season, but both the Cowboys and Vikings sit at a disappointing 1-3. They'll meet Sunday in Minnesota. After committing 12 penalties for 133 yards in last week's loss to Tennessee, Cowboys linebacker Keith Brooking knows what's wrong.
The answers, I think, are very clear that you can't play stupid football. You know, you can't do silly things in the course of a game.
Dallas coach Wade Phillips says despite giving up 6 sacks and throwing 3 interceptions, it's not all bad news for the Cowboys.
There are a lot of things that are going on that are positive in that our quarterback throwing the ball well, or our receivers are catching the ball. We've been able to run the ball. I think we're playing very tough on defense. And just like you said, the stats show we're in the top of the league in both areas.
Dallas does lead the NFC with over 420 yards a game, and their defense is fourth best in the league. But they commit nearly 10 penalties a game, and their -4 turnover margin is 29th. For Minnesota, quarterback Brett Favre missed some practice this week, tendonitis in his elbow. He missed some wide-open throws in Monday night's loss, throws he says he normally could make in his sleep. He says that elbow problem is nothing new, and he's managing it.
It hasn't gotten any worse, but it really hasn't gotten better. I think part of the reason for it flaring up more the latter part of the game the other day, just fatigue and the zip and stuff still there, the accuracy was affected.
Favre says he's done extra film work this week and talked more with newly acquired receiver Randy Moss as they try to work on their chemistry. Moss caught 4 passes for 81 yards in his first game back in Minnesota Monday night, and Moss has a history of playing well against Dallas, averaging more than 100 yards receiving and scoring 11 touchdowns in 7 games against the Cowboys. Sunday's game may not be a must-win, but with the loser facing a 1-4 record, it's pretty close. With a look at the Cowboys-Vikings matchup, I'm Russell Scott for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Russ, you talk about must-win. I look at the Vikings. If they lose this game, I still refuse to write them off. Brett Favre, Randy Moss, Percy Harvin, Adrian Peterson, Vasante Shinko. At some point, and maybe they get Sid Rice back, this team's going to explode. There's too much firepower on offense. But I look at the Dallas Cowboys. I thought they were overrated coming into the season. You know the drama only builds if they lose here with Jerry Jones and Wade Phillips and Jason Garrett. I think this is absolutely, Wayne, a must-win for the Dallas Cowboys.
It's a pivotal game. There's no doubt about that. Meanwhile, the Miami Dolphins, coming off a bye week, head to Green Bay to take on one of the most injury-riddled outfits in the NFL, the Green Bay Packers. Questions abound over who will play in this one. Some of those questions to be answered in this report by Greg Matzik.
When the NFL season began, few teams could match the firepower of the Green Bay Packers. Fast forward to week 6 of the NFL season, and few teams have been hit harder with injuries. Entering their Sunday afternoon matchup with the Miami Dolphins, the 3-2 Packers could be without a roster's worth of Pro Bowl caliber talent. Tight end JerMichael Finley will miss 8 to 10 weeks after surgery to repair his meniscus, and linebacker Nick Barnett could miss the same amount of time after wrist surgery. Along the way, the Packers have also lost starting safety Morgan Burnett and running back Ryan Grant for the season. Additional firepower could be lost if linebacker Clay Matthews' hamstring doesn't respond quickly to treatment and Aaron Rodgers' post-concussion testing doesn't satisfy the doctors. If Rodgers can't go or is forced from the game, backup quarterback Matt Flynn would take over under center. And according to wide receiver James Jones, Flynn is a diamond in the rough.
We got 100% confidence in Matt. Matt's a great player. I think he's just waiting for his opportunity as well, just like everybody else. So I think if he does get the opportunity, he'll take advantage of it.
Meanwhile, the Miami Dolphins are 2-2 and coming off back-to-back division losses to the New York Jets and New England Patriots. But coming off a bye week, the Dolphins are rested, irritated, and looking to capitalize on the holes in the Packers' defense. Wide receiver Brandon Marshall comments,
"There's holes in that defense, and they're going to give us opportunities, but it's on us to take advantage of it when it presents itself. So we're excited about it. You know, our heads are high. We've been working hard past couple days, and I think we're on the right track."
And while Marshall will be locked in a duel with last year's NFL Defensive Player of the Year, Charles Woodson, the Packers' secondary will definitely have their hands full with number 2 receiver Devon Bess. The third-year pro from Hawaii is coming off a game where he recorded 8 receptions for 96 yards and a touchdown against the New England Patriots. His quickness in and out of breaks and precise route-running ability will give the Packers headaches. It's the Packers and Dolphins on a fine football Sunday afternoon in Green Bay, with each team looking to reverse the trend from the previous game. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Greg Matzik.
Thank you, Greg. Analysis of more top games coming up after these messages. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly. We resume with our preview of the top games in the NFL. The Chicago Bears are 4-1, and they take on the 2-2 Seattle Seahawks this week in Chicago. Now, Seattle's been very good at home and not good at all on the road, but there are quarterback questions in Chicago, Hub, concerning the health of Jay Cutler, who suffered a concussion a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, Wayne, you know, the Bears are a bit of a surprise at 4-1, but everybody knows this team goes nowhere without Jay Cutler. He took that horrible beating against the New York Giants. Now, they've declared him ready to go this Sunday for Seattle, but Cutler talked a little bit about, well, what it was like to suffer it and what it was like to be on the sidelines.
We talked to a lot of doctors, and concussions are kind of a hot spot this year in the NFL, so they wanted to make completely sure that I was good to go, and Monday I went back and talked to him, and you know, everything's clean.
Well, and you look at quarterbacks around the league who've suffered with him. Kevin Call, Matt Moore. You've got the question in Green Bay, you know, whether or not you're going to see Aaron Rodgers this week. And Cutler pointed out, you know, there's a lot of injuries you can try and play with, but, well, this one?
But I wish I had still started every game. You know, it's tough. This league is all about battling through injuries and stuff, but obviously concussions in your head is something you have to take pretty seriously.
And Wayne, the Chicago Bears, it gets a lot tougher the second half of the season. I'm not ready to anoint them as anything yet, but they got a great shot at being 7-1 at the break, at least 6-2 when you look at the schedule. Without Jay Cutler, they're going nowhere, so keep a close eye on Cutler this Sunday and see how he bounces back.
Well, and you look at the Vikings, they already have 3 losses and may have a 4th if they don't win that game against Dallas this weekend. And the Packers, with their injury list, yeah, if the Bears go 7-1 the front half of the schedule, you know, they could afford to play a much tougher second half and still win the division. One of the more attractive interconference matchups this weekend features the 3-2 Colts at the 3-2 Redskins. Now, both teams are coming in off victories. Colts took down the undefeated Kansas City Chiefs. Well, the Skins got by the banged-up Packers in overtime a week ago. Hub, this should be an intriguing game.
It really is. And you talk about the Indianapolis Colts. Nobody knows what to make of it. They are in a 4-way tie atop the AFC South. They would be 4th because of the tiebreakers, but there's a long way to go here. And we've talked about Packer injuries and the Cutler injury. The Colts have gotten clobbered. You know, you look at offense, they've been without Anthony Gonzalez at wide receiver from almost day one. Then they've had other wideouts get nicked up on the defensive side of the balls. Where they've really gotten hammered, though, is their former defensive MVP, Bob Sanders, went down. Then his backup and their special teams captain, Melvin Bullitt, went down for the season. So they're back to their third and fourth safeties starting. You've had Clint Session miss time at linebacker. You've had Gary Brackett dinged up. And yet still, they bounce back against a very questionable Chiefs offense. Now, this week they're on the road against a very questionable Redskin offense. What's interesting about this game is the Redskins, even though they're 3-2, they're 31st in the league defending against the pass. What can Jim Haslett and company do against Peyton Manning and company?
Well, speaking of the Chiefs, they're 3-1 coming off their first loss, as you documented, at Indianapolis. They're on the road again, meeting the Houston Texans, who are 3-2. And when you look at this Houston ball club, they're coming off a hammering at home at the hands of the New York Giants. Our preview of this Kansas City-Houston game is provided by David Nuno.
A battle between one team that was expected to take the next step against another who is doing it quicker than expected. Houston was a preseason favorite to contend for the AFC South title, and they're doing that with a 3-2 record. But there have been some hiccups. Last week against the New York Giants, they were pummeled 34-10. Head coach Gary Kubiak says the Texans just have been inconsistent.
Well, we've played some very good games and some very, you know, a couple of poor ones and big spurts as a football team. Very good in the spurt and very bad in the spurt. So we're trying to find some consistency there as a football team. That's the key to being a great football team, when you find that same level of player, that same sense of urgency every week in this league.
The glaring problem for Houston is their pass defense. Houston has surrendered more than 400 yards of offense in 3 of their last 5 games. Coach Kubiak does see light at the end of the tunnel.
First off, we have to believe in what we're doing, and I believe in what we're doing. I believe in who we're doing it with. Do we have some young players on the back end? Yes, but we're going with those guys. I've told you guys that from the start. We've got a lot of improvement to do. I continue to see flashes of good stuff, but there's no consistency in what we're doing.
On the Chiefs' side, they suffered their first loss of the season last week at Indy, and head coach Todd Haley says it bothers him, but there were some positives.
You know, we did not play our best on the road against who I believe is a very good team, and time has proven to be a very good team. At the end of the game, we had a legitimate shot still to be in that game.
The second quarter of the season begins now for both teams, and Kansas City says no matter what happened last week, they still need to improve, especially against a formidable opponent.
Our biggest game to date is coming up here in Houston, and that will be our biggest game to date as a team.
At the end of the game, either the Texans will have lost three straight at home, or the Chiefs will have lost two in a row on the road. I'm David Nuno for Pro Football Weekly.
Thank you, David. The best team in the NFC this early season, Hub, just may be the 4-1 Atlanta Falcons, and this week they're on the road to take on the 3-2 Eagles. We'll find out a lot about both of these NFC contenders.
You know, the Falcons have got the longest winning streak right now at 4 games. They're tied with the Bears for the number one seed, but it's early. Falcons have been pretty consistent on both sides of the football, particularly on defense, surprisingly, where they've only had one opponent score more than 15 points. I think, Wayne, what this game really comes down to is that these two teams are tied for second best in the league in turnover takeaway ratio. They're not making mistakes, and they are taking the ball away from the opposition. The Falcons have not been nearly as good on the road as they have been at home. Here's an interesting one for you, though. The Eagles haven't won at home. They're 3-0 on the road, 0-2 at home. And Philadelphia questions the answer. What about Mike Vick at quarterback, and what about the backup running back shot? Because they are beating up Shady McCoy pretty good.
All right, Hub, stay tuned. We've got the headliner and the handicapper's corner up next on Pro Football Weekly.
If you want that free historical information and the free collector's DVD, the number to call is 1-800-905-2965. 1-800-905-2965.
We welcome you back to Pro Football Weekly. The headliner is an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. Well, it's a playoff rematch as the Baltimore Ravens are in New England to take on the Patriots. Mike Petrella has details.
There was no need to remind Tom Brady this week of what happened back on January 10th at Gillette Stadium and how the Patriots' season came to an end with a major thud. But the media horde at Foxborough was all too ready to recall what happened to the quarterback and his Patriots team in a 33-14 loss to Baltimore to end the 2009 season in the wild card round of the playoffs.
We got manhandled, you know, by a team that's a damn good team. And I think everything we said we wanted to do going into the game, we didn't do. Penalties, turnovers, couldn't convert on third down, couldn't control the tempo of the game. You know, I got a lot of respect for these guys. They play really hard. They're very well coached and very physical front. Very emotional team. I think they play with energy and enthusiasm for what they're doing. I think you got to be able to match that, or else, you know, once they get fired up, it's tough to calm them down.
Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco was not spectacular that January afternoon, but he didn't need to be. Running back Ray Rice took the first play from scrimmage and raced 83 yards for a touchdown, and Brady was strip-sacked by linebacker Terrell Suggs on the Patriots' third play of the day, and it was 14-0 within the first 2 minutes of the game. Flacco says there's not that much you can take from the game on film because it was so strange.
You know, last year's playoff game, I mean, that game was just such a different game, and I don't know how much you'll be able to get out of that just because the type of game it was and how quickly it kind of developed, and, you know, what we did, you know, throughout the rest of the game was a little bit different than a normal game plan, you know. So we'll see how much we can get from that film, but the first time we played them there, it was a pretty good matchup, and, you know, I'm sure we can grab some things from that too.
This, of course, will be the first game for the Patriots since they traded Randy Moss to Minnesota and brought back Super Bowl 39 MVP and Brady favorite, Deion Branch. Brady says he has moved on from the Moss controversy and remains friends with him.
He and I, we got along great. We always have since the day he got here, and he's never made fun of my hair. Well, everyone else seems to want to make fun of my hair, but he never has. I moved on. We all have. I really don't want to talk about it anymore.
This year, the Ravens are 4-1 and battling Pittsburgh for supremacy in the AFC North. The Patriots are 3-1 and a half game behind the Jets in the AFC East, coming off a very impressive 41-14 road win over Miami before their bye last weekend. In New England, I'm Mike Petrella, Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, it's very interesting what the Patriots have done. After winning those three Super Bowls, they changed the offense. They brought in Randy Moss. They went for the big home run threat. They became more of a vertical passing game. They played well. They almost went undefeated. They did go, you know, in the regular season. But it just didn't work. They didn't get a ring. So now what they've done is they've retooled the offense to go back to a different style. They use the bye week to do it. They're going to be more of a controlled, not a pure West Coast. They bring Deion Branch back. They've got Wes Welker. Ben Jarvis Green Ellis has become the lead guy at running back. And what Bill Belichick is clearly doing is saying, I'm going to go back to what won us Super Bowls, and it'll be very curious to see how that works in this game against the Ravens.
Well, Hub, I'll be curious to see how their defense evolves. Right now they're 29th overall in yardage, 26th in points allowed defensively. They'll have to play much better than that to make their Super Bowl run. The Handicapper's Corner with Chuck Esposito, casino manager, race and sports for the Tropicana, Las Vegas. Hub.
Well, Chuck, it's great to have you with us again. And I want to ask you about the New England Patriots. They took a bye and completely changed the face of their offense. Randy Moss is gone. Deion Branch is back. It looks like they're going back to more of a controlled passing game, if not a West Coast style, as opposed to the vertical passing game they ran with Randy Moss. What does that do to you as you try and adjust the numbers?
Well, I think it's a little bit of a wait and see of. I really do. I mean, you look at that offense. They don't have a marquee running back. They don't have Moss. They have the underneath guys. It is more of a controlled type offense. The number opened up 3 against the Ravens, a very defensive-minded team. That number has dropped to 2.5. So the betting public is also taking that wait-and-see attitude, but they do like the Ravens plus the 3 so far.
Chuck, am I correct that the number has made a decent-sized move in that Minnesota-Dallas game? And if so, why do you perceive that happened?
Well, both these teams, who are projected to be the two teams that met in the NFC Championship game, have been major disappointments. The Vikings with the struggles on offense, the injury maybe to Favre's elbow here. Public's just not sold on this Viking team right now. They don't look like the same team going into the season. The number opened up 3. It's all the way down to 1.5. Even though the Cowboys lost against the Titans, they looked like a better team on both sides of the ball.
Chicago, Tampa, Atlanta, Kansas City, a few of the surprises. Has the public started to buy into any of these teams yet?
A little bit. I mean, Kansas City, they really haven't at this point. A lot of early action on the Texans in this spot. You look at Seattle, still some question marks. Chicago, they still like that team, a very public team. They're a 6.5-point favorite against the Seahawks. With all the injuries that the Packers have and the question marks surrounding the Vikings, this Bear team just might be the best team right now in the NFC North.
Chuck Esposito from the Tropicana in Las Vegas. Stay tuned. Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, when we had our very own Eric Edholm report for us at the top of the show, and the way we hear it, that maybe a ray of sunshine at the NFL owners' meetings in Chicago this week as Bob Kraft and Roger Goodell talked about the possibility of coming to a new collective bargaining agreement with the players, maybe even by the end of the season. And so I'll take that at face value. I'm not in the meetings. I don't know what they're talking about. But I do want to focus on one thing that Eric said. He said the area that there seems to be common ground on is doing something for the retired players prior to 93 who don't benefit as they should from the pension plan and from health benefits. Well, here's my problem with that. Yes, the Players Association has said we have to do something. It's a prerequisite. The owners have agreed and said, yes, we should. The problem is neither side is willing to pay for it, and that's where we're getting into trouble. And the owners keep hammering away. They want $1 billion back from the players. They want this concession. They want that concession. And they want to do something for these other retired players who aren't benefiting properly, but they haven't offered to step up and pay for it. The NFL Players Association has said they want $100 million put aside, and they want the owners to pay for it. So, yeah, I agree. Let's take care of them. Let's just decide who's going to pay for it, or maybe you should both pitch in and get the job done.
All right, Hub, thanks very much. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Lions and Falcons Radio Networks. Executive coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.